Welcome to the Combat Chat Podcast. This is an Aussie-based show covering everything to do with Muay Thai, submission grappling, MMA boxing, and weird news the fight world has to offer each week. Now, it's time to combat sports and chill with your boys, Shane, Trent, and Hugh.
Hey, yo. What's up, Hugh?
Same old.
It's been a little while since we've done the last one, but hey, we're still here.
When was it even? I don't even remember. All the days are melting together now.
I know. Day drink, he's got me faded, bro. So
for real.
Oh, well. That's all right. Walked down the lane again, that one. We're bringing you quality content, as always.
Yeah, that's what we do. I'm sick of training outside. My feet are destroyed. Cut to pieces.
As I said, you got those bush feet now.
You gotta let us back indoors, man. I'm destroying myself out here.
You gotta moisturize those tootsies, bro.
No, yeah, I'm figuring it out. Slowly but
surely. All right, let's get into it. So, special episode. We got a guest online from here. So let's just do his little bit of a run sheet. So from there, so WKN state champ, WPMF Commonwealth champ. At the height of his career, he was ranked number 5 in WBC. He had a really entertaining fight against Sean Clancy for the international BC title and lost a split decision. one of those ones. Training out of the pit under Blair Smith. WA, it is Roy the Rebel Wills. How are you today, sir?
Yeah, I'm good, guys. How are you guys?
I'm good.
Yeah. We're hanging in there.
That's good.
So, first time you've been on the podcast. Let's let everyone know like your background story. So, like, you know, we really want to dissect like parts of your career. What got you first into Muay Thai and, you know, your first experiences?
First got into Muay Thai when I was real young. Kindergarten. So I would have been about 4 or 5 years old. So yeah, really, really young. And I was lucky enough to attend the same kindergarten that Toby Smith was going to as well. We all know Toby very well, I'm sure. WA legend. So basically what it was is my parents met Blair because Toby and I were friends. And Blair suggested to my parents, oh, why don't you get Roy to come and do Muay Thai with Toby? He's always down at the gym, you know, kind of instead of playing Oz Kick or maybe what the other kids were getting into at that age. My parents were like, yeah, sounds good. Took me down and basically, yes, I trained there from about 5 to I think about 11. So
That must have been like the roughest kindy going in the state.
Mundy John Kindy, shout out to Mundy. That's where I grew up, out in the bush a little bit. So, it was good kindy. Had good mates there. And obviously, yeah, me and Toby grew up all through primary school together as well and the whole time training together. So, it was great.
Yeah. So, you trained there for a fair bit. WA works a bit different than other states as well. So, like, you know, when did you actually start getting into the competition side of Muay Thai then?
Toby and I had a lot of demonstration bouts, obviously with no result because we were training out of the same gym. Both of us were matched a lot when we were younger, but just because of kind of how the shows were, nothing really ever followed through. Like maybe a kid would pull out or anything. So I always remember it was always just me and Toby kind of doing demo bouts. It wasn't until I was 16 that I had my first proper fight that went on my record. So I started training again at 15. I had a bit of a five-year break from 11 to about 15. And then I came back and had my first fight at 16.
So you took that break, kind of like you started out as a kid training, you know, alongside Toby and Blair. You took that break, still went back to training with Blair at the pit, right? So it was only ever like you started alongside Toby so young, and you only ever trained out of one gym, right?
Yeah, correct. Yeah. So, Blair was still fighting when I first started. And then obviously my parents went to Blair's very last, like his retirement fight. And obviously I was training at the gym then. And then, yep, trained with Blair the whole time. Had a break. I never trained Muay Thai in my break. So I tried a lot of other sports, basketball, played a bit of footy, like got selected for the South Fremantle Development Squad, but didn't really progress it further than that. Played a bit of music. I play the drums. So I was in a band for a bit. And then, yeah, went back to the same gym when I rejoined and been there ever since. Still there now, coaching. So
When you took that bit of a break, did you find any, like, did you think now, if you look back now, that it was kind of beneficial, a bit like, you know, to try and, like, you know, get different motor patterns, learn different things? Like, famously, Lomachenko has a similar story where, like, his dad made him take a break from boxing, did, like, folk dancing or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, I heard that story, yeah. yeah, I mean, definitely looking back, you know, I had some good years, like, learned some great skills. I think, like, having a wide range of kind of sports that you can, like, dip into, especially as a child when you're kind of learning you know, your fine hand movements, your hand-eye coordination, things like that. I think, like, doing a lot of kind of different sports can definitely help. Looking back now, you know, like, one of the things I always say is with my drumming, because I liked playing metal, like, songs. I used to really like Metallica and all the kind of fast-paced songs. But I really honestly think that, like, it helped with my kicking when I first stopped. And then when I went back to the gym, I had really strong kicks kind of already because my legs were strong from drumming. So, there's definitely benefits to all the other sports, I think, that I did. Some more than others, but, yeah.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because, like, kind of one of my next questions was going to be, like, of course, training out of one gym, it's a lot of time for a single trainer to kind of develop your style and work on things and let things come out like that. And of course, you know, Blair had that sort of oversight the whole way through. Like, I was going to ask, I mean, you mentioned, like, the drumming helped with your kicks. If anyone has seen you fight, they know kicking was your thing.
yeah, yeah.
Just letting the hard right kicks fly. So it's funny that you mentioned that because I was going to ask, you know, yeah, I guess how you feel you built your style, like what the influences were for it to come together. And I wasn't expecting one of those dancers to be drumming.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think definitely when I first started out, I honestly tell a lot of people that have had like under 20 fights. We've got a strong young group at the gym that have had under 20 fights at the moment, about five or six of them. And I always tell them I didn't get my style that I'm known for now until I'd had between 20 and 30 fights. Before that, I kind of was still finding my rhythm. I always did have strong kicks, but it wasn't until I found that kind of like slow, hard kick in the arm style until, yeah, around the 20 fight mark. At the pit, the way that we train, we kind of don't really identify styles, especially back in the day when it was just fighters gym. It was very intense, kind of didn't get much time at the gym to really nail in and focus on like one specific technique. It was all just kind of go, go, go. I found my style just through having to adapt to certain opponents. Because I fought so often, it was pretty handy to be able to identify what I needed to do every fight and then quickly work on it in the gym and then apply it in the next fight a month later, 6 weeks later, whatever it might have been. So I think I fought six southpaws in a row from about fight 13 to 19 or something. And obviously against the southpaw as a right-hander, right kick was my main weapon. So I had almost a nine-month period where I was just focusing on my right kick. And, yeah, I really enjoyed that. I don't even know if I'd be known as a strong right kicker if I hadn't had those six fights.
Definitely. Like, let's talk about like some of those fights that you had from there. Cause like you got a laundry list of like great fighters that you fought and that made you the great fighter that you were. So like we said in the intro, let's talk about that Sean Clancy fight. And like, tell us about the experience, like, you know, being given the opportunity, getting flown over there. How's the whole experience of everything?
Yeah, oh man, that experience was amazing. You know, we obviously Toby fought on the same card, so he fought Hamza for the WBC world title. So getting to fly over there first off with like my best mate since kindergarten, to do the things that we both absolutely love and grown up doing together, was absolutely surreal to me. You know, I just enjoyed every second of it, even the weight cut, the lead up. We were there for a week, just under a week before the weigh-in and the fight, obviously to get acclimatized to the time zone and the weather and all that stuff. We went in March, so just coming out of their winter. So it was still pretty cold over there. I think like 1 degree, 2 degree days. But that, yeah, that show was really well run as well. And yeah, just to be given the chance to fight for that belt. I think I was ranked number 5 at the time and I was fighting Sean Clancy. I think he was ranked 3. So the winner of us two was able to fight for the world title. And just to be considered for that, you know, like when I started, this was never kind of like, obviously I wanted to do well in the sport, I just took it day by day, and to get there and then to kind of look back and realize like, wow, what a journey it's been. Yeah, it was just amazing. We got treated really well over there. And yeah, the bonus was as well, the day after the fight was St. Patrick's Day in Dublin. So
good timing.
Went off, yeah.
So of course, like the trip over to Ireland to fight Sean was a big one, but you've got a massive resume outside of that. Like a lot of people remember the Tum fights, all like that. Your weight in WA, especially like such like a talent, like a really rich talent pool. I guess outside of that, which sort of fights on the Australian scene, I guess now that it's come to a close, stand out as highlights for your career?
Oh man, there's so many. I've actually got a list. I'll just quickly pull it up. It'll give me some quick reminders. But you know, over the years I've had, obviously, like you said, a lot of good fights against a lot of strong Aussies, had a lot of fly-ins here, but some of my highlights, obviously when I was 19, I fought Dane Daddy Cool.
Yep.
Who at the time when I fought him, he had cleared out the 57-kilo division, and he moved up to 61 kilos. And he had, I think he'd had 4 or 5 fights at that weight against the likes of Mitchell Seth, a couple of others, I can't remember, a couple on Evolution, or Flip Street.
Flip
Street was really good back in the day. And again, he just started clearing everyone out. And when I first started doing Muay Thai, I was watching the Evolution shows on Foxtel, amongst some other shows that were always on Foxtel. And Daddy Cool was like the number one, you know. And
yeah.
I remember being like, oh, I'd love to fight him one day. I wasn't sure if it was going to happen, but yeah, obviously it did. And when it did, I called before the fight, like, oh, one of us is probably going to go down here just because he obviously hits very hard. I wanted to test myself and stand in front of him, hit him back, you know, as hard as I could. And luckily I came off on the winning end of that one. So that one was probably like the highlight of my first half of my career. Probably one of the top Aussies I've ever fought and beaten. But yeah, you know, I fought Alexi Petroulis. He's a top Aussie. Mitchell Seth I fought twice, who back in the day was very, very good, like strong technical fighter. Yeah, so many. I've got I fought Sonny Banerjee, he's a New Zealand fighter, but you know, 60 fight veteran. When I was 19, I fought him. Yeah, too many to count. Joe Concha twice.
Yeah, the Concha fights were good.
yeah. So we were 1 apiece, both fought in the first round of tournaments. One was on Rebellion and one was on Warriors Way.
Yeah.
Prelim, Evolution prelim eliminator or something like that. So many. Ramesh, I fought Ramesh.
Yep.
I fought Chad Collins, who's doing very well. He just had his comeback fight against Ramesh. So, yeah. Long list.
Yeah.
Long list. Great, yeah.
Great list. Yeah.
So yeah, I remember like the Rebellion tournament, which was at the it was like a fitness exhibition. Like
it was at the Expo Center.
How did you find that kind of format when you did? It's like, cause like you thought like it was Sunny, and then I thought I think advertised. He was here for a little bit.
Yeah.
How did you find like doing that kind of that style like fighting? Twice in the night against, I guess, some really stiff competition.
Yeah. Well, I have been in, I think, 6 four-man tournaments here in WA. Mm. So, like I said before, that weight, 63.5 to 65, is so, populated with just killers.
Stack.
Even in WA, we've got, myself, Jordan Gopperson, who's another one that I fought a couple of times, Lloyd Dean. We had Jack 300 and Ty, who's living here. He was just wiping up the division back in the day. So I've been in 6 four-man tournaments and I absolutely love them. That Rebellion one was the only 8-man I've been in, but I was the only non-Ty to get to the semi-finals in that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it was myself, Singh Siri, Tom, and the tie that won it all, North Side.
Mm.
Yeah, but I personally love that format. The great thing about 4-mans or 8-mans is it adds an element of unpredictability, and the best man on the night, the most skilled fighter isn't necessarily going to win because he might have a really tough matchup in his first fight, and a less skilled opponent might get a lucky knockout or he might have a better matchup against someone else, and then when they clash in the semis or the final, they're kind of the better man might not win just because he's had harder fights. So I really love that element of tournament style fights.
A lot of running storylines and little bits of drama get created. Like you say, the more skillful, or on paper, the more skillful fighter might come in with a cut from the last fight or something like that.
Exactly.
His opponent can just go after it. It's just lots of room for drama in the tournament.
Yeah, I absolutely love them. I froth on them, so it's good.
getting a little bit more towards the end of your career than that. I think there was one fight, one missed opportunity that we all missed out on was you were slated to go against Liam Harrison in Perth. Then the whole world shut down. How was your, when you first get that news, was that a fight that you were searching for a while, or just dropping your lap, you go, oh man, definitely let's do this?
Yeah, so that fight, we've got a very good promotion in WA at the moment run by Gav and Darius. They run the MTGP. Yeah, so shout out to Gav and Darius, two legends. They're promoting really good shows at the moment. But I fought a couple of times on one of the Road to MTGP events, which is a more amateur undercard with a couple of main pro fights.
Yeah.
And I fought a main event as that, and then I fought on another proper MTGP card. Gav actually came to me and he goes, Roy, I want to get you fight against Liam Harrison. Will you take it? And obviously instantly I was like, absolutely, what an opportunity. And then he also mentioned, I am actually going to try and get it for the WBC World Diamond Belt title, which is almost like a sister belt to the actual world title belt. The way I've kind of seen it explained sometimes is if there's more than almost like an interim kind of title, but instead of just underneath, it's kind of side by side. I'm not sure exactly what the diamond part of it's about, but even just to be considered for that, I was like, man, absolutely, let's go, all through my career, I've never ever turned down a fight, and I never would have. So obviously, my trainer Blair, he was like, "Yeah, absolutely, let's do it."
Yeah, and for the sake of listeners who aren't familiar with the WBC's diamond title, Yusuf Boganin won one last weekend. Sanchai is a diamond champion. Borkow held a diamond title. It's a top end belt. I think, I, I yeah.
I think there's only been seven or eight or something like that ever kind of been sanctioned. So
yeah. So just for but yeah, I'm interested in. I wasn't exactly sure where it fit in the whole picture, but I had always kind of thought of it as a belt that's breakout for a bit of a legend fight. Like yeah. I thought that was kind of the thing. But yeah, that would have been a sick fight, obviously. But the world went to shit. But I guess I'm interested to hear. Like, was Liam Harrison someone that was on kind of your hit list? I guess as an opponent, or when that was offered, was it something that you had seen as a possibility before, or did it sort of come out of the blue?
I guess, yeah, that's a good question. I kind of, when I was younger, like, you know, I had the kind of Dane Daddy Cool level that I wanted to get to. But I always, even with that fight, when it happened, I was kind of like, oh, wow, you know, it's kind of, well, that came quick, you know, like it's kind of here. And it's the same thing with, the Liam Harrison fight, I guess, you know, kind of getting that international exposure against Sean Clancy, who went on to win the world title. And, you know, having a very good fight against him kind of, I guess, did put me on that kind of level. But I never saw myself in that way. So when it kind of was like, oh, you and Liam, and everyone was like, oh, man, that's going to be a really good fight. I was kind of, I guess so. Yeah, I'm kind of at that stage now. Yeah. So it didn't surprise me, but when I kind of was thinking about it at the time, I was like, kind of at this level now. Yeah.
Yeah. And, of course, you know, that fight didn't get to go ahead. And then there was a bit of a break, as with a lot of people. And then when you did eventually come back, you made the decision in advance of your fight with Barry that it would be your retirement bout.
Yeah.
In advance of the fight with, you know, the scheduled fight with Liam Harrison, did you kind of know it was going to be one of your last couple? Did you have plans to maybe go out on the back of that one, or is that something that developed in the time off?
So at the time of the Liam fight, Blair and I had spoken about it, but not in any concrete way, you know. Like, I did say to him, and I tell everyone now, if I'd fought Liam, whether I won or lost, that would have been like one of the peaks of my career, and probably given the domination team my last fight, and I reckon it would have been the end of that year or middle of next year, which is kind of what it ended up being anyway. Obviously, COVID just delayed all of it, that Liam fight kind of was going to be like the peak. Like, obviously, if I'd won it and then given, you know, for a local boy like Barry for the last one, that would have been, you know, probably it for me. So, I kind of was, I did have that mind space of like, after that fight, maybe another 6 months, max. So, and Blair and I had spoken about that already before that fight. So,
yeah, So when you did retire and made the decision to retire and that one, did you ever look at things like the format that one does? Did that ever interest you at all? Like, would it still interest you if it ever came about, the opportunity?
Well, what one are doing, honestly, are great. You know, like, great for the sport, great for the exposure. I really do wish that one used like 8 ounce like gloves still. I think the small gloves just adds like a element to a Muay Thai fight that slightly alters it from authentic Muay Thai, if that makes sense. I love what they do. And if I was ever given a shot, I 100% would have jumped on, because I'm, you know, always up for any opportunity. I never turn down any fights. So I would have jumped on for sure. I wouldn't come out of retirement for it, though. No way. I'm enjoying
it. Staying retired.
well, that's good. Stick to your guns, you know. You live it now.
Yeah, that's it. I actually don't think I would have, like, the way that they do their hydration tests and weight cuts and stuff, not that I cut weight dangerously at all, but I don't think the method I used to cut weight would have passed their tests anyway. So I probably would have had to fight a little bit heavier than my normal fight weight, just because of I would have been cutting a little bit less to pass their tests.
Your method, that kind of more traditional, just sort of plastics and jogging and stuff like that?
At the start of my career, when there was kind of like, you know, 10 years ago, there wasn't much. Well, here we had really no knowledge of, other than Thailand's way of doing things, which is sweatsuit,
yeah,
really low food intake for the last week, all that stuff. But like now in the last 3 years, 4 years, especially here, like so much science has come into it. One, obviously doing great things with the hydration testing, making the whole process a lot safer. I wish I knew about it when I first started, you know, instead of kind of suffering all those times. But in my last few fights, it was just safely water loading so that when the weight that, you know, weighing day came, I could easily just drop the weight, not feel too uncomfortable, weigh in, and then safely hydrate back again. So in the last couple of years, I really got a hold of like a handle of the process and all that. But early on, it was just kind of like sweatsuit, off you go on a 40 degree day, go running. Yeah,
cool. So Roy, tell me what it's like training under the pit master or the pit boss, Blair Smith. Is he like on Facebook? Is everything in all caps?
It actually is. Yeah, if you can imagine the way that he speaks in those capital letters, that is how he speaks to me. But Blair, honestly, he's I'm sure as everyone knows, he's got his very unique way of speaking, living, training. It's all 100%. He puts 100% into everything that he does, and he expects that in return, you know. So back in the day when I first started, he ran fighters only classes out of the back of his house in a shed, fully set up as a Muay Thai gym. We had an outdoor ring. He had a shed. Inside was matted with bags on the walls, a small ring inside so we could spar when it rained and all that stuff. And, back then it was just full intensity. And I honestly believe that's why, like, you know, 5-6 years ago, we had one of the strongest teams, you know, going around Australia. We had really strong fighters. And we still, to this day, hold that intensity. So we've moved to a bigger, more kind of like way larger location, bigger gym. But that same intensity from Blair is still there. And he translates that into his intermediate classes and beginner classes as well. So, yeah, it's full on, but I think it was needed. We weeded a lot of people out that might have had a couple of fights and done okay, but couldn't keep up with the intensity of the training, which is a shame, but they might have gone on to other gyms and fought and all that and been all right, but the pit style of training didn't suit a lot of people. Like, I've seen hundreds of, like, people with potential come through, not be able to handle, and then leave.
Well, let's talk about the pit team. Like, you know, from when you were, like, you know, like, really making your teeth on the scene from there. So even, like, yeah. Now, like, you know, so Insta story from there, you know, Kyle Hardcastle, you got Stephen Loring, and there's it's still like a really strong team. Like,
yeah.
Can you make some comparisons from like a little bit of like later era to now?
Yeah, so we're kind of going through a little bit of a rebuild at the moment, as every gym does. You know, you get people that do really well for a while and then they all drop off. Maybe within a year, you get like 3 or 4 of your really good fighters kind of finish up. So we're going through a slight little bit of a rebuild now, but back in the day, especially when I first started, within the first maybe 3 or 4 years, so we had Toby just absolutely killing it at the kind of peaking at that Aussie level. I was obviously coming up through the ranks. We had Brett Cranewhite back in the day, who was just a 57-kilo weapon. He fought Josh Tonner back in the day. A lot of really strong Luke Pitbull Aaron. I don't know if you guys know or remember him. He was an amazing WMC champion out of Riddler's. And obviously, Riddler's was a really strong gym back then. We yeah. fought all those boys. We had Brett Cranewhite, Will Shortland, who was... He was an Aussie champ at some point. Just super strong, stable of fighters. A lot of young guys. And now we've got, I reckon, that same kind of process happening. But obviously, I in the last year was kind of finishing up. And I see like a really strong group of young potential coming through like we were 10 years ago, you know. So we've got Leo Nguyen.
Leo's really good.
Yeah. He's had, I think, around 15 fights now and really just coming into his form. Kian Lockheed.
Yeah.
Really tall, strong clinch fighter. These boys are all fighting in 3 weeks on, 2 weeks, sorry, on domination.
Yeah, Kian versus Zach is going to be a really good fight. That's a top match.
Oh, man, their first fight was absolutely
insane.
Yeah. I actually think it was probably fight of the year, just watching all the fights from around the nation. Obviously, there wasn't that many. But, man, that fight, even in a packed year, I reckon that fight would have probably got that spot.
That was a ridiculous fight.
Yeah, man, absolutely. It's probably going to happen again. So it's just those two kind of style of fighters. But yeah, we've got Brandon Hardcastle, so Tyler's younger brother.
Yeah.
He came to our gym, I think, 8-9 months ago. Had his first fight out of our gym. He's fit in really well, kind of like adapted to our way of training very well. Just kind of like put his chin down, worked hard, and he fought so good at his first fight out of our gym. Also fighting in 3 weeks. And then only really recently, Tyler's just come over as well. We can't take any credit for any of his training. Obviously, Darren's done an excellent job with him as a fighter. So all we can do with him is just, you know, get him to try and adapt to our way of training now. And he's experienced enough to thrive, I think, in any kind of location. So, like I said before, we've got such a strong team. Obviously, Stefan Lottering, he was an Aussie champion. He's down, still training a lot. I think, I don't know when his next fight is. Soon, though, I think, in a couple of months, we're trying to get him on. There's hardly any opponents at his weight.
Yeah, he was matched with Jaden from Queensland, right, on the Victorian show.
And obviously, the lockdowns and all that happened changed things, so... We've got really, really strong heavyweight. Big Al.
Alex, the Viking. Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, we've got such a strong team at the moment and all getting that kind of same treatment that we got a few years ago. So.
Yeah, and so you're, of course, doing a bit more on the coaching side now. Where do you kind of fit in for the fight team now? You're in every day. Holding the pads, you're kind of instructing at an intermediate level. Like, what role have you taken on at the pit post-retirement?
Yeah, so it was a pretty clean swap over from me finishing up my fight career to Blair, basically. Blair's original plan before COVID was to live half here, half in Thailand, back and forth every couple of months. So he needed someone, you know, to kind of be at the gym and run the gym while he wasn't here. So this was meant to happen a little while ago and the plans just got put off. So when the swap happened, I basically went straight from fight training. 2 weeks later, started taking all the classes, quit my other full-time job. And, I'm at the gym full-time now. So take all the fighters, trying to coach them, our whole pads for them. Blair's still down at the gym every day. He trains a lot himself and he's still there whacking everyone with a stick when they're not doing knees on the bag properly and that. So it's good. Like, being able to jump into that role and still have Blair there as well, just to kind of help me along and help me get my feet in the water kind of thing.
And then how did you find the, like you mentioned, it was kind of just a bit of a snap transition from fighting to coaching. Did you find it relatively seamless? You just fit in naturally, or it's kind of a different kettle of fish compared to the fighting side of things?
No, it was actually so easy, you know, like I was down there a lot anyway, you know, and it was funny when I first started going down there and taking the morning classes, I'd go down there and kind of just in my casual, you know, gym wear and all that, and I'd feel so guilty because it felt like I was having a day off work to be at the gym. And I'd get home and my wife would be, you know, oh, how was training? Like, not how was work, you know? And I'm like, oh, yeah, it was good, you know? I still move around in there, you know, if there's odd numbers with the boys or jumping, clinching. And
yeah.
So, yeah, it's good, man. I'm loving it. It was a super easy transition. Gave my work a lot of notice. And I've had a great boss at my old work. I was a painter. So, yeah, he was super happy for me and super accepting and, yeah, all that. So, it's been really easy transition.
Awesome. And as we kind of touched on in the beginning, you were a pit fighter from the age of six all the way through and now coaching at the pit. Of course, you'll embody some of those same kind of training values that just come naturally to the pit, but you also have a career and a ton of fights worth of experience to kind of put your own spin on it. I guess I'm always interested to hear from experienced fighters who become coaches. Do you find you do things very similarly to how you were trained in the beginning, or you've made a lot of changes? Like, how do you find the way you coach fighters compares to the way that things were done when you started out?
So we're pretty lucky at the pit. Like, really, really, nothing's changed since when I started to now. Really, the only thing that's changed is like the order of how we do everything in a training session. So, yep. Because we used to do, you know, the kind of like knees, teeps on the bag, ab workout at the end of our sessions back in the shed days. But now that we have to kind of clear the mats for the intermediate class after, all we've done basically is shift that part of our training to the middle. And then we spar inside the ring so that the intermediates can start their classes.
Yeah.
So really, like, structurally, the whole session's the same, which makes it really easy for me because it worked for me. It worked for a lot of really strong fighters out of our gym. So we kind of see no reason to change anything. It'll probably work for the fighters we've got at the moment because most of them have had a few fights out of our gym and they're loving it and they're kind of like starting that rise, I think. A couple of them are knocking on the door of like national level and all that. Mm-hmm. So, as a coach and as a fighter, I think because it works so well for me, I'm happy with just kind of doing the same.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it, right?
Yeah, like obviously there's always little things, you know, like I think... by the time, you know, I think Blair's last fight was, you know, close to, would have been like between 25 and 30 years ago now, or maybe between 20 and 25 years ago. So, you know, between his last fight camp and now is a long time. And because it's my fight camps are so fresh, I think I can relate a little bit more to the fighters now when maybe they get an injury or something like that. And instead of being like, doesn't matter, just, you know, come on, let's go. I think because I've just freshly been through a lot of it, I'm like, all right, this is what you need to do. This yep. is how you need to take care of it. And this is when you need to be back in training. That is what worked for me. I think it will probably work great for you. So I think that's a pretty big advantage we've got at the moment is because it's so fresh for me. Like I can relate to a lot of the hard things that happen during fight camp.
So, like, yeah, with all your experience that you had from your fighting and, like, you know, going to coaching realm now, do you find yourself in partings, like, you know, I guess wisdom over to the fighters now, it's like, look, if you want to be successful at this game from here, you got to look at the long run kind of stuff. What's the main kind of points that you always kind of give out to the guys to kind of can remind them, you know, to, like, you know, for a successful path?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I've actually been speaking a lot about this to a lot of people. Yeah, someone even from our class was like, man, you should do a podcast about this, like just or just somehow release all the this information. I've actually got a Word document written up on my computer of just like the things that I think young fighters should value above all else and how they should try and work it in if they want to be successful in Muay Thai as well as life. Because I'm lucky enough that, you know, I had the career I did, but all the while I got married, I worked a full-time job, I built my first house. It's definitely possible. I think for a young fighter, trying to find that balance between work, social life, and obviously dedicating enough time to train so you can win your fights and not get bashed, is a really hard thing to do, but it can be done, and you just got to really organize your priorities and stick to them. So if obviously everyone needs to live, we need to pay the bills, we need to pay the rent, whatever your expenses are, so you have to work, right? That's number one. I would never ever encourage anyone to go quit your job, try Muay Thai, because unless you're really, really good and you're lucky, you probably never get to a point where Muay Thai fighting is just paying the bills, right?
Yeah.
So obviously if you can get to that point, for sure, go do that. But I think the number one advice I'd give is make sure you find a job that you can fit in comfortably for your life, but also fit in comfortably with your Muay Thai.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of jobs out there. Like trades are a great one. You know, trades usually start early. They finish early. You either get a break before training or you can go to training early and still get an early night ready to work the next day.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, like I was a concreter for early part of my fight career. And like, I just looked at it as a supplement to my training, you know, like strength and conditioning, pushing wheelbarrows and all that. So if you've got a labor intensive job, you know, just look at it like that. You get an extra training in.
Definitely.
Yeah. I see a lot of young guys and girls, you know, young guys and girls get a partner, you know, if they're 18 and they're showing real strong potential in Muay Thai, maybe they go out a couple of times, meet someone, right? And then all of a sudden their priority shifts because they've got this, you know, new person. And then they stop coming to Muay Thai because they have to work and then they want to spend the rest of their time with this new exciting part of their life. And then 6 months or a year later, bang, it's over. And they're like, oh my God, I've just lost a year of Muay Thai time. And a lot of time they come back to Muay Thai. And then so in that regards, I always try and tell people, if you're really dedicated to Muay Thai and you do meet someone, make sure the first thing you tell them is, look, I do Muay Thai, okay? You're probably not going to see me that much at night or on the weekends or ever really, but if we can work through this somehow and like you come on this journey with me, or you know, if it's the right person, I always say it'll work out.
You just say I'll do Muay Thai, you get boom in the bag.
Yeah, it's, right? It's like instant color. Oh, like put a ring on the finger there. I think so. Between those two things, they're the two biggest things that me going through my career, I would just see so much potential in, especially young guys and girls. Happened to a couple of girls, right, that have to get a job and it never fit with Muay Thai, or they'd get a partner and they'd put Muay Thai in the backseat.
Yeah, it's cool.
So do you think
that's good?
Yeah. From a point of like the advice that you give to young fighters who are kind of struggling with that balance, what do you find genuinely like the element of it that they don't understand, or the actual piece of advice they need is just about kind of, are you generally teaching them how to just come up with a way to make it all work, or is it kind of a sacrifice thing? Like, what do you find the thing that they need to change to make it work generally is?
Yeah, it's always compromising.
Yeah.
That you always have to compromise. Like you, if for example you lived the perfect life, right, and you didn't have to work, then you know obviously you could just train Muay Thai whenever you wanted, And if you had a partner, you could spend time with them whenever, you know, you weren't doing Muay Thai. It'd be fine. But there's always that extra element, for most people anyway, of that work. And that takes up a massive part of your day. So you got to work. You have to sleep to train well. You have to get enough training time in. And then there's only a couple of hours left in the day for you to play around with, right? So in that couple of hours, it's really just about using your time wisely, you know. Through my career, you know, it's so funny because, like, back in the day, I never, ever even thought about it like I do now. It just, that was the way I operated and it worked really well. So I was like, I'm not going to change it. But no one told me, you know, this is how you should do things. But I wish I knew back then, because obviously there were points in my career where I was like, man, maybe I won't go to training tonight. Let's, you know, go spend time playing video games or go spend time with my partner instead. But luckily it wasn't an extended period of time for me. But as a young guy, it did happen. And now, like, being able to pass on the knowledge to this new young group of people, they're really, really listening to it. And I think responding quite well, you know.
Yeah, and definitely. So when are you going to make an ebook then?
I don't even know what I was doing, man. I just thought, man, I should write this down. Like, I've written down, yeah. I've written down a like kind of like a, I don't even know what to call it. I wrote it down in a PowerPoint presentation. It was just like something I was going to give to people that were interested in fighting out of our gym, and it had the gym morals, it had the history of Muay Thai, what it is. It had Blair's history, like the founding of the gym. It had, like, you know, information about Toby and, like, the first good group of fighters that Blair trained, like Oliver Warren back in the day, like the original champions of the pit, and then what we expect out of people when they train out of the gym, you know, because there's a lot of information and every gym's different. That's the thing as well. So I was like, I'm going to write a pit handbook or something. So I've got one written up and it's a very rough draft, and I do want to refine it and kind of like even release parts of it, I guess, just if people are interested.
So you mentioned like within that kind of guide, you know, what the gym kind of values are. Like, what are some of the standout values? Like, if you want to be a pit fighter, what do you kind of have to embody?
Well, our gym motto, I think, is like the perfect motto, the most fitting motto for like any group of people training together I've ever heard is the pit never quit.
Yeah.
So on a face value, that really, like, that just means when you're in a fight, you never give up, you know. You never count yourself out of the fight. You can always come back in one way or another and always try and win, you know. But in general, it, like, can be applied to everything that I've done in my life, but especially training. When you're tired on the pads, you don't lay down and say, oh, you know, I'm kind of, like, tired and yeah, I'm giving up and all that. Like, nah. When you're tired, you go for it. So that's probably our number one, like, motto and, like, vibe of the gym. But there's a lot, you know, like, respect to the trainer. We've got those deep-rooted martial arts traditional kind of values, like respect, honor, respecting your teacher, respecting your teammates, helping each other. Obviously, when you're in the ring, you're in there by yourself, but you actually have full team behind you, you know, that have helped you get to that point. So we're very, very, like, family orientated at that gym. Anyone that kind of dedicates a certain amount of time to the pit, we welcome with open arms and you just join the family.
Oh, nice. It's great to hear, Matt.
Yeah.
So I think we're approaching the end of our time here. Plus my internet connection's kind of as always, it just goes an hour. Oh, no, Shut it down.
Pandemic podcast. Podcast. Oh, yeah.
All right, Roy, it's been really awesome talking to you. Just like, there's like, even just that last part, especially like, you know, giving advice to the people out there, like, spice come up. There's a totally different spin that you did on it, but it's like, it's one of the biggest points, the overlook points of, like, you know, fighters nowadays. It's like, you know, making the right, you know, compromises, and it's a balancing act that you always have to rejuggle. There, so I thought that was really awesome advice. So where can people catch you, like, social media wise, or if they want to contact you, even, like, you know, to ask you for your advice?
Yeah, for sure, man. I always highly encourage, you know, young fighters, if they're ever unsure about anything, like, just reach out. You know, I'm very approachable online. My Instagram is probably the best place to contact me. It's just Roy_the_rebel. It's a public page, so anyone can message, and that's probably the number one thing that I think I want to try and pass on, is just, I think there'd be so many good fighters if they had that knowledge now that would have never given up or had to compromise on Muay Thai. Like, you can always find little compromises in life that enables you to do exactly what you want. You just got to be hardworking enough to find them. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Awesome. So, yeah. So, just hang around after the intro, mate, from there. Speak a little bit more. But everyone else, thanks for listening again. So, remember to share our shit. Share the love. Okay? And catch you next time.
See ya.
See ya. Peace.
Thanks again for listening to the Combat Chat Podcast. You can catch all episodes on YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, and all other podcast platforms. Be sure to like, subscribe, and share. Follow your boys on Instagram, Facebook, @Combat Chat Podcast. See you next week.